I'm very happy to welcome now to the Radio Cafe Craig Barjabedian. His latest book, Landscape Dreams, A New Mexico Portrait, won the prestigious New Mexico Arizona Book Award. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks a lot.
And he will be having a new exhibition of photographs at the William Talbot Art Gallery starting on Friday, December 6th. It's called Under a Western Sky. Great to have you back.
Oh, thanks a whole lot for having me here.
This is becoming an annual tradition.
Well, traditions are good, like we said.
So you photograph in New Mexico, and you've been doing it for a long time.
A long time, well over 25 years.
Are you from here?
No. I'm from Canada originally. And through a series of circumstances, I ended up in the United States. And then I married a lady from New York, which got me to New York, and eventually I ended up in New Mexico. And I didn't actually think I was going to stay. You know, I ended up getting here thinking I'd be here for a year. And perhaps you know how New Mexico can kind of come along and become a part of you in a way. And
yeah, you just can't let go. You can't leave.
I know. And it's so interesting that when I travel, you know, I'll get off the plane and say Great Falls, Montana, which is a beautiful, beautiful place. And I'll go, this is really beautiful, but now I want to go home. You know, I feel the need to be here.
Now, was it your relationship to the land as a photographer that really kept you here?
I think it was a relationship to the place that kept me here. I have a sense of belonging here, which I don't feel in other places. I sort of felt like I was just passing through, for example, when I lived in New York, you know, and when I lived in Michigan before that, I just sort of felt like I was kind of biding time. And interestingly, Canada, as beautiful as Canada is, never really felt like home either.
Yeah.
Even though there was a lot of family and extended family and relatives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't feel like I ever really came home until I got here.
It's a funny thing. I think many of us have that. For some people, their home is their home. And for other people, they have to travel to find their true home. And I think that's true of place. And I think it's true of things like music. You find the music of your soul.
That's
and
right.
Meanwhile, when I look at your photographs, what I see is somebody who has lived in this place for a long time, and I can never put my finger on it, but there's something about, to me, the way you photograph, which bespeaks a kind of history with the place, as opposed to somebody who is coming in with a new eye and has never been here before.
I think that's true. I think that a lot of people come and they photograph, and I think this is not just true of New Mexico, but it's true of anywhere, that it takes time to get to know a place. So when you first arrive in a place, you end up kind of photographing the surfaces. You photograph the objects. You photograph the things that are obvious, you know. And that's all fine and good, certainly. But the thing that fascinates me is the subtlety, you know, the beauty of this place that exists on a much more subtle level, that exists in an afternoon breeze and exists when, you know, the clouds break and the sun just appears for a brief moment and illuminates something gorgeously, you know. You sit there and you go, oh my God, you know, oh my God. It's like when I saw my daughter for the first time when she popped out of her mother, you know. It's the look on her face. It's all of that, you know, that comes together and forms the image. You know,
it's funny that you say breeze, because that's one of the things you can't photograph.
No, you can't, you know, and so there's the challenge, isn't it? You know, and how do you photograph how sun feels? You know, you can photograph the sun, you can photograph the light, but how do you photograph how it feels? And that's the challenge as an artist, you know, is how do you take this two-dimensional, you know, object that you're creating and imbue with it some sense of what those intangible things feel like? And ultimately, as an artist, I think that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to photograph how things feel. Not how things look.
Right.
Right?
Very interesting. Now, what are some of your favorite subjects to photograph? What do you find yourself coming back to?
Well, certainly the land, you know, comes along, and that sort of pigeonholes me as a landscape photographer, you know, because I do take a lot of photographs of the land. But, you know, the thing that I really love is photographing the things that strike me about New Mexico. So sometimes it's in the face of, you know, Mary Charlotte, for example, you know, it's in the face of some old cowboy that I find. It's in the face of a small child. It's in the weathered wood. It's in the clouds that pass across the sky. It's in a storm. So there isn't really a single subject. It's more or less a kind of resonance that I'm looking to achieve through the image, you know. So really, the camera in the end is a tool for exploration, not just a way of creating an object.
When you go out on a given day with your camera, what's your process like? Are you looking for pictures? Are you just experiencing that day?
Yes, I think it's the second thing. I'm looking to experience that day and experience it as fully as I possibly can. So ultimately what ends up happening is that as a photographer, I'm looking to fall in love with the things that I photograph. And so I'm not necessarily looking for just a pretty landscape. That on some level is easy to do here in New Mexico, right? You can go out and find a pretty place.
It's ridiculously easy.
but trying to photograph something that you fall in love with and then share with that with somebody to give them some sense of what that vista, that face, that weathered wood, that mountainside, that whatever it is, how that felt, you know, is really, really difficult. And so my process really is one of allowing myself in a maybe metaphysical way to fall in love with what it is I'm photographing. And unless that happens, then really all I'm doing is taking a picture that describes what it is I'm looking at. And I don't want to lead you to believe also that every picture I make comes out just perfectly, because it just doesn't, you know. I think that because I can't fall in love intensely with everything I photograph. It's just
right.
Not impossible.
Or on purpose.
On purpose, because it has to happen naturally.
Yeah.
But when it happens, it's for me at least, it's quite profound.
So, I mean, you go around, Craig Varjabedian walks through his day with an openness to falling in love, but there's also a kind of, there must be a huge amount of craft that you are bringing to each of these moments. I mean, it's not just pure inspiration.
Sure. I mean, there's certainly, you know, using the tool, you know, understanding how light works, how the camera works, how film works. I still work with film, largely.
Right.
You know, and so understanding what those things do is really important. But what's so great about it is that after you do it for a long enough period of time, it becomes almost second nature. It's almost like driving the car in a sense. You know, there's a point where you sort of know how to do that.
Right.
You know, you're not thinking about having to shift. You're not thinking about all. So you just know, for example, if you pull into the left lane, you're going to hopefully put your turn signal on. You know, it's almost like that. It's just an intuitive sort of thing that happens.
Yeah, like playing an instrument.
Playing an instrument. That's right. You're not looking at the fingering anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you're just playing because you're moved by what it is that's coming out of the instrument.
Now, you are still using film.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Why did you, I mean, you're just so used to it. You know that medium so well. Do you find limitations in the digital medium?
No. I mean, I think that they're two separate tools in a sense. You know, they're in a sense like comparing watercolor painting to oil painting. You know, they give you a different feeling, you know, in the result, you know. So when I photograph, you know, I choose the right tool to achieve what I'm looking to achieve. So let's say, for example, in the fall here, the color was just drop dead gorgeous along, you know, the Rio Chama, right? And I made a lot of photographs along the Rio Chama, but those
in color.
In color. And in large, with my big camera, color film is problematic. In that I don't have the tools to really deal with it very, very well. I don't have tools to control it really, really well. But digital allows me that possibility, so I can go in and I can do that. And so I can pull up an image on my computer and I can adjust it and I can make the color feel like what I want it to feel like. And I can make an image, I can make a print that I'm in total control of versus having to rely upon the limitations of the way Kodak or whomever made the film and rely upon what the capabilities of the photo lab, you know. I'm when I have to work that way, I'm pretty much removed from the process, where digitally I'm involved with the process from the capture in the camera through the adjustments on the computer through the final print that I'll end up making on the printer, you know.
And you do that only with color?
Only with color, yeah. With black and white, of course, I'm also involved with, but I'm involved with every step of the way from the moment I expose the film through my own development of the film, through making the prints in my darkroom, through, you know, mounting them and eventually showing them.
When you work with black and white, you just said my big camera. Do you use a large format film?
I do. My camera uses 5x7 inch film.
That's so huge.
Yeah, it is really big.
Your contact prints are bigger than snapshots.
Well, that's true. That's true. And unfortunately, I hardly ever render 5x7 negatives as contact prints per se. They all end up being blown up eventually.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a quality that traditional photography has that digital doesn't have. And there's a quality that digital photography has that traditional photography doesn't have. There's one thing that's wonderful is, for example, the immediacy of it. You know, it's wonderful, for example, if I have to photograph a cowboy and a horse, where the horse is, you know, the cowboy's, for the most part, is pretty easy to sort of, you know, engage with, but the horse is much more difficult. So I have to photograph pretty quickly to be able to do that, and the large camera tends to slow that process down. It's less immediate, you know, yeah. where if I'm in that kind of situation, I could put a digital camera, use a digital camera, and I can work fast and quickly, which is really important in certain situations.
And then throw away 90% of what you've taken.
Well, but my I could do that, but my process is still pretty deliberate. So I'm not just photographing in a sort of machine gun approach. I'm really photographing quite deliberately. I'm looking for that spark. I'm looking for that engagement with whomever or whatever it is I'm photographing.
So when you use a large format camera like that, I mean, 5x7-inch negatives that make incredibly detailed prints. I mean, there's a lot of information on a negative of that size.
Yeah, there is.
And then when you blow it up, you have that and you see it in tremendous detail. How many pictures would you take on a given day? I mean, you go out and you watch and you perhaps wait and then make one photograph? Or, I mean, you're not doing that, as you say, machine gun approach.
No, but so often what happens, let's say, for example, you're photographing a storm coming across the Hamas, right? You know, that storm has many, many moments that take place within it, you know. And so what I'll do is I'll make photographs. I'll shoot several different exposures of that storm as it develops, because I never quite know, since I can't foretell the future, I can't really know what happens when the storm will build and then it'll crescendo and then it'll, you know, sort of recede, you know. And so I'll be photographing each of those moments so that I can actually go back into the darkroom later and after I process all that film and take a look at the storm and say, okay, which one speaks the loudest? Which one resonates with what it was like to stand there and watch that incredible event come across the mountains? And that's the image that ends up, you know, finally being printed and shown.
It occurs to me when you're speaking that there's always potential for more collaboration and communication between artists and scientists, and it would be so great if you hooked up with meteorologists.
You know, that's a really an interesting question, and someday I've been thinking about doing a book on clouds. You know, I just think that they're so amazing as an art form, and you probably have heard the stories about, you know, Alfred Stieglitz and his photographs of the equivalents, you know. As a little side note, you know, I just hooked up, you know, in the Stieglitz quote, he talks about making a photograph that would resonate with something that Ernest Bloch, who at the time was a really well-known composer, would say that's the crescendo, that's what music means. And the funny thing is that I just hooked up with his grandson, which is a really interesting sort of, you know, sideways.
Stieglitz or Bloch?
Bloch. Yeah, I just hooked up with his grandson by way of, can you believe it, of Facebook, you know. We became really good friends by way of Facebook.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this idea of the equivalent, I mean, if I remember correctly, Alfred Stieglitz would try to make photographs of clouds that were the equivalent of the emotion that he was feeling.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And the beautiful thing about that notion of the equivalent, you know, which has also been expressed as sort of metaphor in a way, is that in the end, I think that's what I end up doing.
Yeah.
You know, is that when you look at a picture of a storm going across the Hamas, or you look at a picture of, you know, some old cowboy that I end up photographing, you know, he becomes, I hope that he becomes about all cowboys, not just specifically that cowboy, or that storm becomes about, in a sense, about all storms, or becomes all about New Mexico storms.
We're talking to Craig Varjabedian. Having photographed for so long, do you see in black and white?
Yes, I think I do. I think that there are images that just call to be photographed that way, you know. And the, one of the things I love about black and white photography is that it you become, in the images, you end up becoming so much more aware of the form that you're photographing. And even more importantly, perhaps, is you become more aware of the light in the image. Where in color, so often what ends up happening is you become overwhelmed by the color. You know, and that you it's difficult to get past it because you recognize what the objects are. Then you recognize what the color is, and then the light almost becomes a third recognition when you view the art. You know, so what's nice about black and white is that number one, it in a sense abstracts things because you remove the color, and then number two, then you have to notice the object, and then of course number three, you see the light.
Now we were talking a moment ago about the size of the prints that you make. Do you usually blow up images to be very large?
It depends on the image. You know, sometimes some images really are called to be blown up really big because that's how they want to be viewed, you know. But some images are much more intimate. You know, they're much smaller and it's not that they technically couldn't be blown up, but they're not appreciated, I suppose. That the size tends to get in the way of what it is that you're seeing. sometimes if it's a landscape, you know, that you know, a big storm, let's say, that we were talking about a moment ago, that image then sometimes calls to be made really big, because then you can really enter it in a very real way.
What about photographs of people or animals?
You know, it varies on the subject. You know, I just photographed my dog recently, you know, and I made a really wonderful photograph of him, and I am working on a print of it right now that's larger than he is.
What?
Yeah, it's going to be bigger than the dog actually is.
I hope he's a Chihuahua.
No, he's an Australian heeler, you know, but he has such an expressive face, you know, and there's something about seeing him big that I find absolutely fascinating, because he has such riveting eyes, and so you when you see him big, you just immediately lock on to that presence that his eyes, to me at least, seem to express.
They make paper as big as an Australian heeler?
Oh, and bigger, yeah. I can print, you know, I can print up to 40 inches by, you know, whatever length I need.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, when you, for example, produce a photographic book, you're really limited by the format of that book.
I am, and the publisher usually defines what that is. Yeah. You know, so that's always sort of a trade-off when you end up publishing, because, you know, there are images in the Landscape Dreams book, for example, that really resonate when they're, you know, really large. The cover photograph is a good example of that. That photograph of the Rio Chama up north of Abiquiú there. And it's one of those images that certainly does well at roughly, you know, 11 inches, which is what the book size is about. But it's remarkable how you almost enter the image. It's like when you see it in a large size at 40 inches, it's almost like you're standing next to me and viewing that scene from the side of the cliff where I was standing.
Even though it's black and white.
Even though it's black and white, yeah. Yeah, you feel like you're standing next to the artist, you know, or next to the view.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, do you teach young people how to do the kind of work that you do?
Yeah, not so much in the analog world, you know, the traditional darkroom side of it. But I certainly teach a lot of digital photography today, because that's largely the medium of choice.
Is the darkroom side kind of fading as the years go by? I mean, 30 years from now, do you think people will still be doing black and white darkroom photography?
Yeah, but I think it'll narrow, you know, certainly, just because of just the extra work that's required. You know, the digital side of this has a much simpler learning curve from a technological side. You know, it's much easier to get an image very quickly with a digital camera. You know, you can make one with your iPhone, you know, and you have an image that looks like something. Whether that same image has that presence we were talking about a moment ago is a whole other conversation, and that's what you end up really teaching in the end. I mean, you can teach people how to use Photoshop, and you can teach people how to use Lightroom, and you can teach them how to use their camera, but ultimately the goal for me as a teacher is to teach folks, how do you take pictures that mean something, you know, and how do you take pictures that are authentic, that mean something about their experience of traveling through life?
It's also, I mean, this is something that came up during the 50th anniversary of John F. Kennedy, when he died, there was exactly one home movie.
Yeah, the Zapruder film.
The Zapruder film of his assassination. And today there would be 537, some huge number. We live in an image-saturated world.
That's right.
In which people look at images for a few seconds and then move on. And what you're doing is slowing that process down, or living in a world where there's a much slower and more deliberate and more contemplative way of seeing.
I think that's true, and as an artist, you know, the challenge that you have, of course, is that, you know, images have supplanted keeping a diary. People today, you know, their lives are on their cell phones largely, in terms of what they record and what they choose to remember, right? Choose to remember in some kind of form, and so the challenge for any photographer today is how to get people to stop and say, look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that. You know?
And then come back to it. Another again. Day and look at it again.
Right. And to me, that's the mark of a great image, whether it's by me or anybody else, you know, is that it's like the, not that I'm comparing my work to the Mona Lisa, but it's the idea I'm trying to get across is like the Mona Lisa, in that you can sit there and go by it and say, okay, it's a picture of a woman, and move on. But there is something that beguiles you about her as you stand there and look at her, that you walk away and you go, you know, there's still something else there, so you have to come back. And you have to keep taking a look at it, you know? And there's other forms of art that are like that, too. You know, Matisse's water lilies certainly, or Monet's water lilies certainly remind me of that as well.
Yeah.
You come back to them again and again and again because you want to know how it was possible for him to make the water move.
Right.
You know?
Right. Or something you might put a photo, you might frame a photograph and put it in your house, and you see it every day, and your relationship to it deepens.
That's right. And that's what I find really, you know, just humbling, is when someone gets to that point where they say, you know, I need that to be a part of my life. You know, I recently got a call from Vienna, Austria, from someone who purchased an image of mine, you know. And it will leave this week for Vienna, you know. And
nice.
You just sit there and you say, my God, you know, somebody in Austria needs to have a little piece of Ghost Ranch, which is an image I had made of Ghost Ranch, in their home in downtown Vienna. You know, that to me, that's profound. Not that so much as my image, but just the idea of that
right.
is really, really profound.
Craig Varjabedian is a photographer. His new exhibition is opening this Friday at the William Talbot Fine Arts Gallery in Santa Fe. It's called Under a Western Sky, and your website is craigvarjabedian.com.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and once again, congratulations on winning the New Mexico Arizona Book Award for your book Landscape Dreams, a New Mexico Portrait.
Thank you so much.